B-Pod Studios.
Make it your home page.
A connection.
985thesportshub.com.
Toucher and Rancher live on Radio Row. Toucher at the GWC. Presented by the New England Volkswagen Dealers. Watch the show on twitch.tv. Just follow the Sports Hub.
.985 Sports Hub, we're Toucher and Rich, and we are on Radio Row, and Steve Smith Sr. from the NFL Network is not promoting anything.
I'm actually promoting the NFL Network.
Okay. Right. Okay. Fair enough.
Everyone watch the NFL Network. And Steve,
you don't even have to watch it. Just turn it on, let it run.
No, sure.
You know, we get the ratings. And
you are very good at television.
Am I?
You are.
Oh, thank you.
Because I'll tell you why. It's because you get pissed off very easily. And you are not afraid to attack people.
You think it's easy. It's not really. I don't get irritated easily. We have so many dialogues in the green room prior to.
Okay.
And then they'll switch it up. And then we talk on air. And it's like, bro, because it's, what's the unique dynamic on set is you have a reporter or an insider.
Yeah.
Who never plays. So I get to, like, we dialogue about things. I'm like, bro, you can't say that. You can't just come on because you have seen it this way. He's lazy or he doesn't put in effort. Like, what do you think we really just sit at home? And he's like, yeah, you're right. I just don't like the fact that sometimes, as a foreign player, the media, they just kind of say things that is like are misconstrued. Like, one of the things I hate about a beat writer is a beat writer in open locker room, guess what? 15, 20 minutes to interact with someone.
Yep.
They do that over 16 weeks, and they say, oh, I know him. I've been married almost 19 years, and there are things about my wife. And I see my wife butt naked. So I'm pretty close to her.
You've seen your wife naked?
Wow.
Yes.
My goodness.
Twice. Well, actually, we have four kids, so four times. Right? And there's things about her that I'm just learning and figuring out.
Right.
There is no possible way that you can really get a true, holistic sense of who someone is by maybe interacting with them out of your 20 minutes, 5 to 7 minutes over what, 16, 17 week period?
Right, right.
What have people said about you that was totally misconstrued?
People say that I don't have a high IQ.
Who says that?
A lot of people. Because sometimes I am lazy where I just say, that was dumb. And I don't always articulate why I thought it was a dumb question I don't agree with it. And they say, because when I played, I did strategically make sure there were certain people I interacted with. They only got the version that I wanted to give them.
Right.
The short version, the part of where I really didn't desire to have this interaction, so I was just kind of like, I gave him short answers.
So they took that as you had a low IQ?
Well, just kind of like, he doesn't know how to articulate things, or my mind is working. Like, even right now, I am dialoguing and processing how I will break down the game and why I like things and why I don't. Like, in my notes for a game, I break down my notes on things.
Yeah.
I have a legal pad. So I have a column where things I go back to, and then I'll break it down by quarters. What I seen by quarters, why, what, how. And I do that for most of the games, which is why I am pretty much so ready for football season to be over. Because I've watched so many.
Fun? Yeah. Is that even fun?
What?
Having to do all that?
Well, what's intriguing to me is I love numbers.
Right.
So numbers for me is like a puzzle. So when I see a game, I look at the numbers first to tell me why. And then I'll think of, well, they didn't do this.
Yeah.
And then I watch the game, then I look, and it goes, yes, exactly. Like, great example. Why people say Tom Brady or they're vulnerable, the New England Patriots? That's because statistically, Tom Brady has never been lapped by young quarterbacks like he has right now. Mm-hmm. He has 4,078 yards. 71% of those yards, 11 yards and below.
Right.
Yeah.
Are his yardage. 714 out of 4,000 are 20 yards plus explosive plays. Mm-hmm. So 71% of his yardage is really intermediate routes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? I think 1,064 yards of that is in middle of the field. So they run the snags, angles, drive routes. So those are the things, like, for me that I love to see, that I love breaking down, that for me, that's that puzzle. That's my love language.
Yeah.
In the numbers.
Well, you talk about Brady. I mean, there was rumors for a while that you were almost a Patriot.
Yeah, almost.
What happened?
Well, there are some things that happened. There are some things that Baltimore offered me. The point I was at in my career, I was going more of how I felt about things, mm-hmm. and going with my gut. And the one thing that I love about Baltimore that I know I wasn't sure that they would allow me to do was my oldest son was at the time, they didn't move up because he was his senior year of college, and he was getting recruited, ended up getting a scholarship to University of DePaul to play soccer.
Okay.
Right? And I couldn't uproot that. You can't mm-hmm. uproot him in a senior year. He's getting scouted.
Yeah, yeah.
And to go to, they come to Charlotte, and then they say, well, we're not going to Boston.
Yeah.
And it's not a guarantee he was keep the same position.
Yeah.
Right.
So they stayed there. And so away games, I flew private from away games back to Charlotte. And we had Mondays off. And I spent Sunday night, Monday, sometimes Tuesday. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I wouldn't get back into Baltimore till Wednesday.
Is Flacco dumb?
Excuse me?
Is Flacco dumb?
No.
Okay.
Done or dumb?
D-U-M-B.
No, he's not.
Okay.
Why do you say that?
I don't know. He's got a reputation. People say he's dumb. I guess he's the beat writer.
No, Flacco just plays the role of like what?
Yeah.
When he doesn't want to answer.
Okay.
He plays all right. Dumb.
He plays like whatever. Like he just doesn't.
Does he have any kind of charisma?
Yes, he does.
Okay.
He's
that's very, well hidden.
So this is what I learned about Flacco. When he was younger, mm-hmm. his dad brought him up a certain way. Don't show emotion.
Yeah.
Don't give an edge. And he's been like that his whole life. So a lot of it, me and him joke around. We used to joke around. He'd laugh. Then we get on the football field, he'd be like, right? He'll say little things to me, and I'll be like, oh, okay.
Okay.
He's like, you didn't see that one coming.
Yeah, he's still alive on the inside.
Like one time, I ran a route that was not even in the game, in practice. I ran and he goes, "If I wasn't such a G, I would have never got it to you right there." I said, "Damn!" Right? I was supposed to run a comeback. They blitzed. Dean Pease blitzed us. Corners pressed up. I gave him a move. He jumped outside. I ran a slant. Joe threw it. He's like, bro, what are you doing? I was like, man, you got it there. Don't worry about that. And that was his reply. So he's not, man. He's exceptionally intelligent. He knows the playbook back and forth. He's actually really, really smart.
Well, there's a storyline that's real quick.
Okay.
You know, there's a storyline that even the Eagles jumped on top of last year with the Patriots aren't a fun organization. You know, Belichick is like, you know, he crushes all type of fun and personalities, and you are about as outgoing as it gets and outspoken. Was there part of you when you thought there was a chance that you might be with the Patriots that thought about what it would be like to play for Bill Belichick?
Enter the cone of silence.
No, the thing is, this is what happened while I went to Baltimore. First of all, Coach Belichick called me on the phone when I was heading to Baltimore. I already had some offers. But what was the cool part is I'm sitting there in Ozzie Newsome's office, the GM, Mr. Newsome, what I called him when I originally met him. He says, this is what we want from you. We want a guy that's going to do this to Pittsburgh and do it on the big stage. If you can't be yourself, we don't want you.
Okay. And what did Belichick say?
Well, we had a conversation. We talked. But this was in person when I was in Baltimore.
Right. Okay.
And at the time, when I was released out of Carolina, some of the things that were coming out was, you know, about my personality, about who I was. So I've had a team that said, Coach Harbaugh said, we want... If you can't be, you have to be you because everyone else is taken.
Yeah.
He was like, look, if you can't be yourself, we don't want you here. I was like, so you want all of me?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You never hear that because it's always.
Right.
You never hear that because it's supposed to be. Football has got very stodgy and bulletin board material.
Yes. And he was
and
like,
all that.
We want you to say on a big stage, we're going to smack some teams in the mouth and go out there and do it. Leader. We've never had an offensive guy with your mentality other than Anquan
mm-hmm.
that has been for Baltimore. Can you be that?
Yeah.
The numbers were good. I got to go home whenever I needed to.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There was times where my daughter had a hernia surgery mm-hmm. in the middle of training camp. I told Coach I was worried about it. He said, man, go home and be a father.
It's awesome.
Right?
That's really good.
Yeah. And I was off work, and Harbaugh said, Steve's having a personal day. I stayed in at home for a week in training camp.
That's awesome.
I wasn't hurt. I got to be a daddy, right? And he respected that.
Mm-hmm.
At that time in my career, you know, being away from home, it was important.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, he gave me something that I didn't think I'd be able to have. They talked about, you know, being a father, making sure you can go home if you need to, and they did that. And I love that. He attached that, and that's why I was like, wow.
That's great.
You know, okay. And I was worried about it. I didn't have that opportunity with other teams.
Well, real quick.
I have to ask you one question. Sure. You got in a fight with Jermaine Wiggins?
No, I never got in a fight with Jermaine.
What happened with Jermaine Wiggins?
It was when I was in Boston. It was a whole conversation about it. It happened. Stand by.
Because we know him. He's always around.
That's why I never put my hands on him. He never put his hands on me. We didn't get in a fight. We maybe got in a disagreement because he was we were teammates. He said some things I didn't like. I kind of approached him. We had a disagreement. We had our words. And that was it.
I didn't say we were friends with him, so you can talk.
No, go ahead.
It's not about talking.
I didn't. He just wrote it to me. I didn't even know anything happened. He just wrote it to me.
That's part of it.
Let's talk about a clash of the Titans when it comes to trash talk. You and Aqib Talib had a thing there for a while.
Yeah.
Okay.
And we love Aqib.
I love Aqib too. I went and saw one of my good friends, Torrey Smith, was on the sideline when he was with the Eagles. They were playing Denver.
Mm-hmm.
And I can show you right now, my 12-year-old son at the time went to the game, saw Talib, and we talked. And after we talked, he took a picture with my son.
Oh, that's great.
And Talib was like one of the best wide receivers I went against. So for me, man.
What was the origin? Like, can you kind of take us back to like what was said on the field?
Well, we played against each other twice a year in Tampa.
Yeah,
right.
So we just professionally disliked each other. I professionally disliked Joe Hayden because he was playing with Cleveland when I was in Baltimore.
Yeah.
The game has changed now where guys are friends. I grew up in the era of football. You were not friends.
Right,
we
right.
We didn't work out and train with each other.
Isn't that better? Right. Isn't it better that way?
Yes, because it helps you get up for the game.
Yeah.
Like, man, this dude's going to try to knock my block off. I was just on set with Hines Warwick and Ed Reed. They were trying to kill each other every day.
Yeah.
They weren't exchanging cookie recipes.
Yeah. Does any of that linger? Like, because you're outspoken on the NFL Network, and I'd imagine, do players now ever get pissed at you?
There's some that critique me, and there's some that they text me, bro, you know, like, but then there's other guys where if a guy drops a pass, I'll say, man, that was uncharacteristic of him.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say, oh, he sucks.
Yeah.
Oh, he's not very good. But when I also hear a guy say something, I look at his film and I look at him as a player.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm not just going to go, oh, he can't play. He can play.
Yeah.
He maybe isn't a 10-time Pro Bowler.
Sure.
Right? He may be number 3 on the depth chart for a reason.
Yep.
And I may say, you know, he's not the worst, but he's not the best. He's definitely, like I'll say, oh, like they asked me, which quarterback would you rather play with? And I go, I think that's a dumb question. Because the way I think is, who's the offensive coordinator? That's why sometimes you think I look on TV and I give a guy a side eye. I'm like, bro, so you telling me that you would rather play in this office because this how do you know it's going to work out for you in that manner?
Yeah.
Right.
Without
a
doubt.
You know?
So, okay, but the one thing that is awesome about you on the NFL Network is that when you feel you're disrespected, you speak up, and I'm talking about Michael Irvin making that comment. What was it about? You said Anquan Boldin hadn't had a real receiver or something.
Since
Anquan Boldin. You're sitting there.
Yeah.
Like, you're sitting right next to him, and it got intense.
Yeah, it got intense. On and off air.
That was all real. Off air. Okay, what happened off air?
Well, we just had a conversation because when you make statements like that, you're basically saying to that guy, like, well, and I felt like sometimes don't be lazy.
Yeah.
Right? Don't just make a statement because – you know, and I kind of said some things like, well, you know, you play with Troy Aikman, Charles Haley, you know, like other Pro Bowlers.
Yeah.
All the Hall of Famers.
Yeah.
But it was more in a part of, I love ball. I know ball. There's guys, there's wide receivers, there's players. Like, I was on the Boomer show.
Yeah.
And Boomer was talking about wide receivers. And the first thing I thought of was, I remember Boomer hung out Don Beebe. I know ball. I just think about it. Wide receivers, yeah. DBs. When I look at film and I study, I'm studying the TE stunts of the end and the tackle, talking to Willie McGinnis, explaining to me what are the different styles of defense alignments and stance and all that stuff. That so for me, I'm really trying not to just be lumped in as a wide receiver.
Yeah,
but you're learning the entire game.
Sure. Entire game.
What do you think of a guy like Edelman when you watch him play?
Oh, I love him.
Yeah.
I love Edelman. I love what he does in the slot. I love how he does it. The way he does it, he goes about it. Element understands the first play sets up the guaranteed play at the end.
Right.
And so everything else in between is just data. It's just information to go. How am I going to play him on this? How am I going to play him on that? He's one of the probably, I think he's one of the best slot wide receivers up there with a Donald Driver, with a Wes Welker.
Yeah.
Right?
Is he a Hall of Famer?
Who?
Edelman.
Edelman? I believe he will be. I believe.
Yeah, really?
I believe. Because he has a pedigree and he had his stats. And what he's done, he's just remarkable. And I love watching him play.
All right. Well, Steve Smith Sr., they've been telling us for about 10 minutes.
Time to wrap it up.
Yeah. They've been telling me we've got to wrap it up. NFL Network, I'm not kissing your ass. You're the best person on NFL Network.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. I truly believe that. Sometimes Urban and Sanders just start yelling over each other.
And then they laugh a lot.
I mean, it's hard. You get high-spirited. I'll tell you, a lot of conversations go in the green room. So when they get high-spirited, it's because that conversation started 3 hours ago.
All right.
That's awesome.
All right. Steve Smith, thanks so much for the time.
Appreciate it.
Dutcher and Rich are live on Radio Row at the Georgia World Congress Center. Presented by the New England Volkswagen Dealer. Watch the show on twitch.tv. Just follow the Sports Hub. Dutcher and Rich on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Detroit verse, everybody.
98.5 The Sports Hub. We're Toucher and Rich. This hour of the Toucher and Rich show from the Georgia World Congress Center is brought to you by Brookline Bank Signature Business Banking. And in the guest chair, Big Y World Class Market guest chair, we have Burt Breer, but that's not all, Rich.
Yep. Friday morning's Burt Breer brought to you by Salvador Auto Group. Salvador has incredible deals on Chevy, Ram, and pre-owned trucks. Just off Route 2 and Gardner, and at salvadortrucks.com. Salvador's got your truck. Good morning, Mr. Breer.
Good morning, guys.
You were telling us you had a cluster F of a situation involving a podcast a couple of days ago.
Yeah, no, it was not. It was not good. I had to learn how to use the equipment because the podcast producers aren't here. And so I went and did it over there at one of the tables. And I thought I had everything set. And I don't know how the audio stuff works, but I always think, like, if I can hear it in my headphones, then it's on.
Yeah. And right? So you had a bunch of, like, people that you were interviewing on the phone.
And it was It was just, like, it was me and Jenny and Connor. And we had, like, I had the mics and all of it. I thought all of it was on. I still don't know what I did wrong. But somehow only the device which I was talking into was recording. The two mics that were connected to it weren't. And so then yesterday, I swear to God, I was on FaceTime with my producer for about 2 hours trying to figure it out, and he was giving me weird looks like, you idiot, what are you doing? You have no clue. And we eventually got it done.
So the podcast was just your voice and no one else?
Right.
You should have just, like, imitated the people that you were interviewing. Perfect. Just filled in the blank.
Yeah, it just said worked, you had, like, famous athletes on.
Hey, Bert, right. You're the best. Everything you say is awesome.
Well, you guys could have, like, helped me out, right? Like, splicing, like...
millions of voices.
Yeah. You could interview Mark Davis.
All right. Well, that doesn't sound anything like that. Mark Davis, we had on Tim Brown.
Yep.
And Tim Brown saying that Mark Davis was not dumb, saying that Mark Davis is shrewd.
Shrewd?
Yeah, he was very defensive about Mark Davis.
I've never heard that word.
Now, is he
just... not the word I would use to describe him, but...
Yeah. He might not have used that exact term, but he was saying how Mark Davis was a little sharper than you think, but you would contradict that.
No, I mean, I think I don't think he's dumb. The way he comes off, though, like, there's just, like... I mean, look, the haircut, the way he talks, the, like, kind of flighty eyes, like, all of it. You guys see it. Like,
yeah,
I don't need to be a reporter to see that. So, like, and then there's always, then there's the way his dad treated him, which I'm sure you guys know about.
Yeah. Okay, so real quick, just, if you can do it in less than a minute, what was the story about how he was called into a meeting when Al Davis was running it with all of his
draft room.
And everything?
It was a draft
the
room.
The draft room. Yeah. And Mark Davis was told to get the hell out after they asked him.
I can't remember exactly what it was, but the part I remember was that Al Davis pulled him in to throw him out. Okay. Like, pulled him in the office to kind of, like, step on his son, which it seems like a bizarre move.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so that was why. And honestly, that's why when Al Davis died, like, he fired everyone. And the reason he fired everyone is because everyone had seen him treated that way, if that makes sense.
Sure,
right?
Okay. Right.
So because he was treated like Tommy Boy for 20 years in that office, they his, you know, like, he felt like he couldn't have the people who saw that around.
Right.
So they completely cleaned house, fired everybody, brought new people in. And I think it was his way of maybe trying to re-image himself, which is tough to do when you got a bowl cut.
Oh, yeah, okay. It's tough to do when you're wearing all white. I do want to ask you a question about the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Okay. Greg Zuerlein, his foot, his plant foot is bothering him.
Right.
He's been in a boot.
He's been in a boot.
Yeah.
You know, obviously, kickers in these games are incredibly important.
Yeah, that's I'd a say big so. Deal. Yeah.
And this is a guy who kicked a 57-yard field goal to win the NFC Championship.
Is this being underplayed?
Yeah, and I don't think it's one of those things where they know until – they're not going to know until game day.
Why not get a backup? Can't they, like, bring in somebody?
I think they would have by now, but they would have
by now. They would have by now, and you – I mean, you only have 46 guys up on game day, right? So you're like, I know it sounds like a lot, 22 starters and 11 starters on offense, 11 starters on defense.
Yeah.
Kicker, punter, snapper, that's 25. So now you're talking about 21 players beyond just the specialists and the starters.
Backups.
And you have to fill out special teams. And so there's definitely a push and pull to that. I understand what you're saying, but that number 46, it's like I said, it sounds like a lot, and it is compared to other sports, but you get into, like, you get to 44, 45, 46 before, like a lot quicker than you might think.
So you think that means McVay, more than likely, is going to be aggressive. I mean, if there's a chance where it could either be a long field goal or we go for it.
He was, look, he trusted Zuerlein in big spots.
Now, was he hurting before that championship?
There was, I mean, I would tell you this. He trusted him at the end of that game. And that was a very risky thing, kicking that field goal.
Sure.
Because if he misses that field goal, now all of a sudden the Saints are at the spot of the kick.
Yeah.
It's a 57-yard field goal. Like, they need, what, 25 yards maybe to win the game at that point? Mm-hmm. So you're saying, like, if we miss this kick, Drew Brees needs 25 yards to get us out of the playoffs. It was a ballsy decision. It showed a lot of trust in the kicker.
But was he in a boot before the NFC Championship?
No, he tweaked it in the game.
Okay, well, then I think that makes all the difference.
No, but if he tweaked it before the kick, did he tweak it before the final kick?
He might not have told anybody. He might have tweaked
it. No, I understand that, but if he made a 57.
He tweaked it before the kick, but you know how those things work, right?
Yeah,
they can get, like, you can kind of go on adrenaline, and then the next day you wake up and it doesn't feel right.
Yeah.
So that's what he's been dealing with. It is a big deal. Like, the fact that you've got a guy who you've relied on and, you know, he kicked a couple long field goals in that game, a couple big field goals in that game. It's something definitely worth monitoring, and I don't think the Rams are going to know, like, 100% until, you know, they get to game day.
They don't keep it like me, 100.
No, they don't.
And look.
I just imagine the emoji you texted.
They don't have that there. Yeah.
I mean, the other thing is, too, guys, like, I mean, they could sign a kicker. Like, everybody, all these teams have emergency.
That's a hell of a lot to ask. A guy off the street all on these Saturday.
But all these teams have emergency lists. Well, yeah, but if you cut the, like, it's just, you could be calling someone right now.
Is there a guy
stay
team?
Ready.
Is there
2 days before, we want you to kick in the Super Bowl. Yeah. I mean, that's a lot to ask of anybody.
I mean, if they find
usually the backup kicker is the punter.
Okay.
And that never goes well.
Yeah, it usually doesn't go
well. But the punter's Johnny Hecker.
Hecker's Superman. Though.
Yeah, same guys.
What is that, a Belichick thing?
Yeah, that's a Belichick thing. I just
real quick, we got a break.
Oh, go ahead. Then break.
No, we got a break.
We got three minutes.
Oh, we do? Oh, okay. I was looking at the clock.
Yeah, we're on a...
Looks like you guys are all over it. Like, I was all over the podcast.
It's fine. So. All right. We're breaking.
Trust my brain.
While we're talking injuries, then how big of a deal is Todd Gurley's injury?
So the explanation I got was that he was dealing with stuff, like a lot of players are dealing with stuff at this time of the year, but his benching was not injury related. They went with the hot hand. They decided that we're going to use Gurley situationally. So they used him 2 minute. They used him no huddle, and they just weren't in a ton of those situations. And when he was in the game, they had him blocking a lot. And so, look, they decided to go with the hot hand in that situation. They did have him in the game situationally. The good news for them, as I understand it, no pouting on the sideline. Like, he did show effort when he was in there and blocking. And so he's responded to it well. Okay. Now, the question is whether or not his confidence is shaken at all. Because a couple people pointed out to me this week, like, he seems a little reserved and everything else. Now, sometimes that can be, a confidence thing. Sometimes it can be the guy's just sort of laying in the weeds.
Yeah.
And I thought it was interesting, too. If you guys saw, McVay was very aggressive about getting in front of this on Tuesday. His first media availability, first question he was asked about Gurley, he came out and he said he's going to be a big part of the game.
Okay. All right. Here are the headlines. We'll be back with more with more Bert in
yes,
just a moment.
Yes, Blanche?
Yes.
Dutcher and Rich are live on Radio Row at the Georgia World Congress Center. Presented by the New England Volkswagen Dealer. Watch the show on twitch.tv. Just follow the Sports Hub.
Five, the Sports Hub. We're Toucher and Rich. Why did my voice go? This hour of the show is brought to you by Brookline Bank Signature Business Banking. We're joined by Bert Greer.
I have to ask you if you know any details on this. So Steve Smith sat down with us and we were talking to him.
Yeah.
And throughout the interview, you know, he's playfully talking trash and a lot of the guys that he's kind of butt heads with. I mean, the Michael Irvin thing that was on the NFL Network was pretty funny, mm-hmm. where he felt disrespected. Obviously, you keep Tlaib and him used to go back and forth. But the minute we mentioned Jermaine Wiggins.
That's right.
Dude
really?
Was like.
Yeah, he got like real serious.
He's like, serious. I don't even want to talk about that guy.
Would not say a word.
Like he was all kind of jokey.
They were teammates, balls. Right, in Carolina?
Yes.
Okay, so do you know, because the reason we knew about it is in the middle of the interview, one of our people who works at the station slid us a note, said, ask him about his fight with Wiggy. And we were like, okay. And so we asked him, and immediately the tone changed. And he was like, I don't even want to talk about that guy.
Did he walk off, like end of the interview?
No. But he was pissed. I mean, you could tell. And if I took anything away from that interview, it was that he still hates Wiggy. And do you have any idea where this comes from? Because this is all new to us.
I mean, no, but we could guess, right?
Yeah.
I mean, if it's a fight and there's still a grudge, maybe there was there a female involved? I don't know.
No, I have no idea about
okay.
that.
So
they just slipped. You just got a note slipped to you, and that was it.
So I got someone showed me their phone. They said, ask about the fight with Wiggy, and I said, what did you get in a fight with Wiggins? And he just all of a sudden was like, yeah, you know, there's a disagreement.
Yeah, where he was like, you know,
we need to hit each other.
Yeah, he's been talking the entire time.
And he did not want to talk about it. And so, I mean, okay, so in their prime shape, like they were the best at their game, who's winning that fight?
Wiggins outweighs him by about 40 pounds.
Yeah,
well,
but
Steve Smith's crazy.
That's true, he is.
Yeah.
Like, it's true.
You cannot underrate that part of it. Like, we used to talk about like who would you least like to fight in the Patriot locker room, right? Back when I was in the beat in 05 and 06 and 07. And I always said, for me, it would have been Corey Dillon. Because most of these guys would kick your ass.
Yeah.
But would have mercy on you.
Yeah, they'd stop at
like
a certain
they'd
point.
Stop. Like right, Corey right. Dillon
so
would
special
not
kind
stop.
Of crazy.
Right. Right. If you're knocked out, he'd rip out your eye socket.
Right.
And
I think Steve Smith's one of those guys that would not stop.
Right.
Like, right.
That, like, having that sort of screw loose.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it'd be very hard for me to bet against that guy in the fight.
Okay.
Like, when him and Tlaib went at it.
It was great.
It was incredible.
That's Ice Up Son, right?
Yeah.
Ice Up Son.
That was me on the field with Steve.
Oh, was it really?
I was the one interviewed him. Yeah, because I was coming off the field and
he was hot,
and I could tell, and I'm like, this is just it kind of clicks in your head like
too good to pass up.
No. We were walking off the field, and if you look at the look on my face, I'm like I can't believe what he's saying.
Yeah.
And it's just one of those interviews where you're doing it, and you're like, I just got to say as little as possible.
Yeah, stay out of the way.
Just let him go.
Yeah, stay out of the way. And hopefully he doesn't swear.
So during your time, like, was there ever a player that would bow up to you? Like was there ever a point where...
I don't think I ever had, like, a confrontation with a player. Like, and there weren't that many in the Patriots locker room, in fact, my year covering the Cowboys, I probably saw more confrontations between players and reporters than I did in all my time around the Patriots.
You were there right when Bledsoe, it was when
no,
Bledsoe
no, no, no,
was
I was right after
right?
that. So okay. I was there when Wade was the coach.
Okay.
And the team I covered was really good in 07, and then Jerry got really excited and started rolling the dice a bunch, right?
Yeah.
And so he traded for Pac-Man, and he paid Tank Johnson. So Pac-Man, Tank Johnson, T.O., Roy Williams, and there was a corner of the locker room that Pac-Man and Tank were in, right?
Yeah, well, you
were lucky. That was lovingly dubbed the D-Block. And they were very proud of the fact that they called it the D-Block.
So it was kind of like enter at your own risk situation.
And it would be like, it was one of those things where if you went in there and you asked, and like, you know how it is. Like, Foxborough and Dallas were, like, they're so different the way you cover the team.
Oh, right? Without a doubt.
Because the Cowboys are covered aggressively. Like, people go in there and, like you're asked, there are real questions being asked all the time. It's a little hostile, in the locker room. And if you're a reporter, you constantly have to have your head on a swivel.
Well, you're right? also,
because everyone's talking. Like, you go to Foxborough. You're like fairly comfortable. No one's popping off.
Yeah.
Oh. And at Valley Ranch, it was like you're like okay, this guy's talking over here. This guy's talking over there.
They're free to pop off.
Okay. They're all saying whatever they want.
I have a question for you. Dan Shaughnessy wrote an article about Berge. How do you pronounce his last name?
Bergerian.
Okay, and he couldn't get. And I guess it's Belichick's right hand man.
Yep. His chief of staff.
And he talks about how, like, he won't talk to anybody. Do you know what he does for the Patriots?
Bears?
Yeah.
So, Bears was a PR guy with the Jets.
Right.
In the late 90s. And he and Bill got close. And Bill wanted to bring him to New England. This almost happened by accident, right? So, Bill wanted to bring him to New England and make him the director of PR. Stacey James was, and you guys know Stacey. Stacey right. James was already there. And from my understanding was, Kraft said, well, we can't, like, we already have a PR director here.
Yeah.
But I'll let you hire him. And so he almost accidentally, like they created a position for him. So he became, like, Bill's chief of staff. And if you look, as guys have left here, like, that position has been duplicated in other places. Like, there was this woman, Megan O'Brien, for Eric Mangini with the Jets and the Browns.
What does he do, though?
Josh hired, like, a high school buddy of his who was working in sports marketing, I think, to be the guy in Denver. That guy's now Elway's guy. So he's sort of – he's his chief of staff is the best way to put it. Like, he's the guy who sort of, like, he manages media to some degree for him. You know, he's sort of the gatekeeper. Does that make sense?
Why is he so secretive? Like, why does he not talk to anybody?
Right, because
I don't
Bill
know if he's super secretive.
Way.
All right. So
that's the way Sean.
Here's what Shaughnessy's talking about. So, like, and this is old. This doesn't exist anymore quite the same way. But there used to be like a black book that you would get at the beginning of every NFL season. You open the black book, and there's pictures and email addresses, cell phone numbers, all of that.
We used to get those of
all the PR directors, right? All the PR directors in the league. And so, somebody like Dan, I think, would say, like, well, he's secretive. It's because, like, his picture and name weren't in there.
Okay.
And he does have some of the functions of a PR person, right? Like,
right.
He is, like I said, a gatekeeper. So he's the guy that, like, if when I was still on good terms with Bill, like, if I wanted to get Bill, I'd hit up Bears.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Like, and so, like, he sort of has some of the functions of a PR guy. And I know for like, what Dan's getting at here is, like, well, why the hell isn't that guy in the black book?
Right.
So that's why he says, like, he's not like a traditional PR guy.
All right, let's take a break, Rich.
I have an answer on the Steve Smith and Wiggy fight.
Oh, hey. All right. I look forward to hearing that. Right. We'll return.
Toucher and Rich are live on Radio Row at the GWCC. Presented by the New England Volkswagen Dealers. Watch the show on twitch.tv. Just follow the Sports Hub.
You got in a fight with Jermaine Wiggins?
No, I never got in a fight with Jermaine.
What happened with Jermaine Wiggins?
It was when I was in Boston. It was a whole conversation about it. It happened. Stand by.
Because we know him. He's always
That's fine. I never put my hands on him. He never put his hands on me. We didn't get in a fight. We maybe got in a a disagreement because he was a, you know, we were teammates. He said some things I didn't like. I kind of approached him. We had a disagreement. We had our words. And that was it.
Wait, okay. I didn't say we were friends with him, so you can talk.
No, no, go ahead.
It's not about talking.
I didn't. He just wrote it on a. He just wrote it to me. I didn't even know anything happened. He just wrote it to me.
That's part of it.
Yeah, his sense of humor kind of went out the window.
Yeah.
On that question, it's 98.5 The Sports Hub. We're with Burt Breer. We are here on Radio Row, our last day on Radio Row.
And we were trying to figure out what was the fight or what happened between the two of them, Steve Smith and Jermaine Wiggins. And we found this. This is from Pro Football Talk, but the source on this is one Scott Zolak.
Oh.
It says, now this is from a
January. So there's like a 45% chance that this is accurate.
Yeah, sounds right.
No, well, I mean, whatever happened, like Steve Smith is still not happy with it. So something happened there. This is January 13, 2015. It's at Saturday's Ravens-Patriots game. So Wiggy wasn't playing at this time.
Sure.
Saturday's Ravens-Patriots game included an intriguing postscript. Baltimore receiver Steve Smith and a former NFL player turned radio host nearly got into a fist fight.
Yep.
Jermaine Wiggins and Steve Smith had an altercation at Gillette Stadium as the Ravens were boarding the team bus. Wiggins, who played with Smith in Carolina during the 2002 and 2003 seasons, currently works as a radio host. Wiggins apparently referred to Smith as a bully on the air, and Smith found out about it. Scott Zolak, who works in the Patriots game day broadcast to witness the exchange, explained the situation. He said, quote, so Smith sees Wiggy and he's like, yo, what's up? Wiggy says, hey, Steve, what's up? And Smith is like, no, dude, what the blank's up? Zolak said, that sounds exactly like Scott Zolak. Yeah. Wiggy's like, oh, now you're swearing in front of my kids. And he's like, you got to step up. And then it starts getting nasty. Steve's like, man, you called me a bully. What's up with that? You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to blank you right now.
Ooh, now wow, it's getting wow, romantic. That's right.
Ooh la la. Well,
things took a turn, my friend.
How about that?
I don't mind that at all.
No, not at all. So after he says that I'm going to blank you, they started holding hands, walking down the hallway.
There's a thin line between love and hate, my friend.
Yep. Steve's like, man, you called me a bully. What's up with that? You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to blank you right now. He said, we're
wow,
assuming.
Wow, another
said,
proposal.
More than just one word that was bleeped. Said others intervened with Smith, quote, yapping as he got on the bus, and Wiggins apparently no longer concerned about things the kids may hear, giving it back to Smith verbally. Quote, I'll tell you what you are, Wiggins said. You're the same thing you've always been. You won't do nothing. You won't do nothing. You're a bitch. You won't do nothing. And it said Smith had multiple past incidents with teammates, but in recent years, apparently, he's matured. And while it's fine for him to take issue with Wiggins' comments, threatening to bleep him or whatever Smith specifically said isn't the mature way to resolve the situation or the best way to blah, blah, blah. Okay, so it sounds to me that the you're a bitch, you won't do nothing was happening as Steve Smith was walking onto the bus and probably already on the bus.
Oh, it was like the Carmelo Anthony thing?
Yeah. It's like, oh, yeah, now you won't do anything like that.
Sorry.
So
they could both kick our asses. So no disrespect to anybody.
Of course. But I mean, but so Steve Smith found out he called him a bully on the air? Huh?
I don't know.
Why do you understand? Like, you're a bully.
Wait, like on the air where?
I think at the time he was like doing stuff on our station. Like he was like 10 questions.
In like 2002?
Yeah.
But this is like
2015.
No, this is 2015.
Oh, 15. Okay.
This happened
in 15. So Wiggy wasn't even a player. So he's sitting there, and I mean, maybe there was more to it, but it sure didn't seem
well,
like.
Well, and now if we're talking about like post career Wiggy fighting Steve Smith, then Steve Smith
would destroy post career Wiggy, destroy him.
Yeah, he was real cool and he was nice, but there was something in his eyes, Steve Smith, that you could tell.
Yeah,
how old were these guys when this happened? These guys are both like well into their 30s. When
oh
this
sure,
altercation.
But I asked Steve Smith, I go, is Flacco dumb? And he goes, and what do you think? He says, he thought I said something else.
Oh, is he done?
Oh, yeah. Said, and I go,
he's
is
like,
he
no,
dumb?
He's not done. And he goes, no, is he dumb? And he was like, no.
All right. Well, Bert, what is your prediction for the Super Bowl, if you may?
I'm trying to be consistent and not waver on what I've said everywhere. So I'll stick with what I've said, which is Patriots 35, Rams 31.
Okay, so we're supposed to at some point have Michael Vick coming by. So in the meantime, because I do want to ask you one more thing when we get back. All we're doing is headlines. We'll come right back. We have audio of Ray Lewis. Ray Lewis has returned to Atlanta.
Oh, has he made comment on the jacket party that he's having
no,
tonight?
No. All I know is that he went on the NFL Network yesterday. So he's around right near where we are somewhere or was yesterday.
And I have to be honest.
Ray, what's it like to be back in Atlanta?
Well, I mean, what are you doing?
How do you not?
I don't know.
All right, well, that's got to be the first question, right? Like, what are you doing here?
Well, of course.
No commercials here, just the headlines.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.